Welcome to another edition of the Parenting Pathway Podcast, and I'm still angry at whoever came up with that title, although I think it might have been me. This is Dave Carl. I am the pastor of Children and Family Ministries at Stonebriar Community Church, and today I have with me the lovely Miss Linda Wiley.
Hello.
And Linda, what do you do here at Stonebriar Community Church?
I am the high school ministry leader, and I have the pleasure of working with students from 9th to 12th grade, and also dip down a little into 7th and 8th grade.
And for about 8 years, you prepared for this job by doing?
I was over the early childhood ministry, and it did prepare me. Some of the kids that are graduating this weekend were kids that I had as preschoolers.
Yeah, you were here long enough.
Yes.
That's not everybody gets to experience that. So
pretty awesome.
I remember as a junior high pastor eventually getting like pulled over by a cop, you know, and looking up and like, no, you're still in the seventh grade. And he was.
Did he let you go?
No, he did not. All right. And also with us is, I said Miss Linda, it's Mrs. Linda Wiley.
Mrs. Linda Wiley.
And Mrs. Chrissy Smith. Welcome, Chrissy.
Hi.
And what do you do here at Stonebriar Community Church?
I am the pastoral leader of women.
And you prepared for that by doing what for a decade before this?
I've been here 15 years, and I did most of the time working in care ministries as a pastoral guidance kind of counselor person, and caring for people that way across the church. And I have since moved into a place of leadership with our pastors and oversee all things women here at Stonebriar.
So clearly you've both been perfectly prepared for the jobs that you have. You don't feel overwhelmed ever, right?
Nope. God has equipped me for each day.
See, Linda and I are going, yeah,
we're not at all prepared. Yeah. Every day. And have to fully rely on the Holy Spirit to get me through.
Amen.
But Chrissy, no, it's not so much. She's right.
Well, and because I've been around both of you for enough years, you know that I, in my natural conversations, tend to skew toward the guys and their problems, because that's what I, in my job, that's mostly what I deal with. Today, I want you to help keep me focused primarily on girls in the junior high school, college age, young married stages, probably skewing younger in that group than not. And I've got a statement that I want to start off with to kind of set the stage for our discussion today. So,
great.
Students of the next generations are experiencing a new level of frustration and confusion with God. They're not inclined to simply obey God. They want to know why they should, what'll happen if they don't, and perhaps what the price of temporary disobedience might be, because they think they're pretty willing to pay that. They want to have their cake and eat it, too. And I got to say, that's not crazy thinking. They feel like they maybe have found a loophole, mm-hmm. and they want to get everything they want, and kind of as they think the story in the future, and one day, when I'm ready to settle down, I'll just stop being all crazy, and I'll have everything I want. And one girl in particular says, and God has to forgive me,
mm-hmm.
which is not untrue, but there's an attitude there that makes that all just all kind of crazy. So that's what I want us to launch in today. So let's start with Linda. What is so different today from past generations that our kids are not they are instinctively not interested in falling in line? Authority is a bad word.
I think there's several things. I think the fact that parents, when we were kids, we would go out in the summer when the sun came up, and we would come home when the sun went down.
Mm-hmm.
We had no cell phone. We had no, you know, if we got a flat tire on our bike, us and our friends figured out how to handle the problem. We didn't call mom or dad. And I think that the problem solving skills have gone away, and parents have really cater to our children, not intentionally, like really wanting to love them well. And so our kids make very few choices on their own. So I think this is one of the choices that they feel like they can make. I feel like they're saying, and the world is doing a fantastic job with social media, just selling it better. Back in the day, if you were having sex outside of marriage or drinking or any of the perceived bad things, you hid it. And now the kids are bragging about it.
Yeah, you could lose your job. You could not get into a college.
Yeah, no, no. Now the kids, it's almost like a status symbol. Status symbol if you have same-sex attraction. Status symbol if you've, experienced all those things that we're seeing as bad. So the temptation, I think, is greater. It's at their hands. And they just haven't been trained how to make choices on their own.
You don't have to go to a skanky movie theater.
No.
To get involved with pornography.
There used to be like big buildings that said XXX on the side.
Yeah.
And those aren't here anymore. So, and we haven't trained them how to make decisions on their own.
So Chrissy, as that then spills over into their how they think spiritually, they feel like in our world here, we're dealing largely with kids that have spent a lot of time in church.
Mm-hmm.
If they've grown up in this church, I feel comfortable in bragging a little bit. These kids, they know the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
They are not unaware of what God has asked of them, and so they know the Bible, and that has not helped them want to obey. Some of them, at all. And they feel like they've figured out a loophole. So.
Yeah, I think they've been given information along with all the other information that they are able to readily access at their fingertips, in their home, on their phone, in an endless sort of way. There is no finite set of information. They do not have a set of encyclopedias that only has 12 volumes.
Right.
So if it's not in there, you don't get to know the answer. It's infinite knowledge. And so they've got a ton of knowledge that doesn't have any other weight in their life that's different from the knowledge they've got at school, from the knowledge a friend told them. They don't understand the power of the source of knowledge or the power of having the knowledge. And that's just because of really generational change. Their grandparents saw knowledge as a way to have power and choice. And so then they were teaching the parents of kids now, they were teaching them to appreciate and take advantage of this opportunity to get to choose by having power and knowledge. And so education has really only become a huge priority and ultimately an idol in the last 50 years, 70 years maybe. And so now they have been given so many choices.
Mm-hmm.
And not, as Linda said, not given an understanding of a basic right and wrong at a level of brain development that gives them the ability to make the right choice. And even decide for themselves. I mean, they've been choosing what they wanted to eat since they can remember. And so why would they choose to study about God unless they were told? Why would they choose to do what's right unless it's good for them or it's what they want? What would motivate that? That's an intrinsic motivation. And intrinsic motivation isn't something that you just kind of figure out one day. It's something that's developed over time as your brain develops.
So if we kind of, for the conversation's purposes, if we flip negative, and if we were raising kids to obey, because I need you to obey or I want you to obey, if we went with that, if obedience was the only goal, and, past generations have been characterized by that. You just toe the line and don't ask why. But if we wanted to do this badly, if obedience was the only goal, what would we be doing to to raise our kids?
Like, we would set limits and boundaries in their life from the minute they were born and make them adhere to them, which, you know, two generations ago was standard. Mm-hmm. And now the limits are limitless, and parents feel guilty for restricting their kids, so they don't. They'd rather their kids have the opportunity to have choices and figure it out for themselves. And so obedience is doing what the authority has asked and is going to require them to do. Ultimately, when you tell them that's the rule, and then you demonstrate in your behavior and in your discipline approach that it's not what you're going to do, they figure that out really quick. And so they're just going to do what they want to do. Mm-hmm. And they know that that authority, whether it's you or their teacher, that ultimately you're not going to make sure they do it. And so how could they see God, particularly in the Old Testament, which is not something that we school our children on, the God of the Old Testament, that God would be at all displeased with them is a difficult idea for them mm-hmm. to conceive, and that he would allow consequences for their disobedience is out of their grasp. It's out of the grasp of adults that they're looking towards, that are examples for them. So how would we expect them to figure that out?
And you instinctively, because you are Chrissy, you went a positive angle. So good for you, and I agree with all of that. So I'm going to go to an expert.
On the negative? Is that you? Well,
I mean, I was thinking of, you know, we would shame them.
Oh.
We would.
Well, that's what was done several generations ago.
We
sure.
Would, we would punish them takes. Because, and my, I mean, she's in heaven and she'll forgive me, but my grandmother would say to her children, "What will the neighbors think?" Mm-hmm. I mean, so it was a full-on, you have to obey or you'll.
It was about the family image. It was more about how bad behavior and choices make us look as parents. And, yeah, shame, guilt, punishment, corporal punishment probably. And obedience to God is a goal, but loving him is the ultimate goal, and just following the rules.
Don't get ahead of ourselves. You're talking about loving God already.
Sorry, but just to follow the rules. Like, I think when I first started parenting, that was my goal.
I completely agree. I mean, if we miss the point, mm-hmm. and we believe that obedience is the goal, mm-hmm. then we will do about anything to get obedience. And what inevitably can happen is that a kid will learn, and you had alluded to this earlier, Chrissy, that if we're having them do something and we're not doing it, they won't even know the word, but as a five-year-old, they will understand the concept of hypocrisy.
Double message.
And they will learn the word later, but they'll know the concept. If all we're after is obedience for obedience's sake, what they will learn when they bump into kids who are disobeying and not having to pay a price for it is what I need to do is learn how to not get caught. Mm-hmm. Because getting caught is the only downside of disobedience. But that is absolutely void of any relational aspect of obeying. Mm-hmm. And if we're talking about obeying God, and we've learned all I have to do is not get caught, or I think I figured out a loophole so that, because God said he'll forgive me if I come back. So I'm planning to come back in about 6 years and ask for forgiveness for this stuff that I don't even feel bad about, I have no regrets about. And I mean, theologically, that is so, logically, it makes some sense. Theologically, it's just a nightmare that they ominously may not recover from unless they, I mean, from my experience, go through some kind of a crisis and have to relearn, like, everything they know about God. This is rehearsing to not be able to have a relationship with God.
Mm-hmm. I think part of it is the not getting caught part is with the digital age of social media and stuff, our kids aren't, they're not learning how to have relationships.
Yeah.
Like, they don't have them like we used to, where it's face-to-face, authentic, deep. They have this mile-long, wide thing of people they call friends, and they're all half an inch deep. And so I think the same is true with parents. And I think we take our kids, a lot of us, at face value, and we're kind of in denial. We don't want to catch them, because then that causes a ripple effect of pain in our families. So we're not even having authentic relationships with our parents, because they don't want to get caught and we don't want to catch them, because it just keeps the peace if we don't. And what we're learning is that even the kids in our high school ministry that are like would be perceived as popular and have it all going for them are lonely and isolated. There's not one kid that I think would deny the feeling of loneliness and isolation. So a lot of them making bad choices comes down to self-medicating.
Yeah.
Because they haven't learned how to fill that relationship need with people. And if you don't have that model of people, how do you translate that to God? Like, how do you even know how to have a healthy relationship if you haven't had it? And I think the ones that do have it, it's miraculous, really.
And that goes back to their parents. I mean, again, this is all generational. We get what we get from our parents, or lack thereof, and they're only operating with what their parents did or their grandparents, depending on who raised them and who all was involved in that process. And, you know, as adults, when we become parents, we make the choice to either parent just as our parents did without a second thought, or we make adjustments based on our own experience. Well, if we're able to do that, that means we have sorted through some things on our own, become independent and individualized enough to do that, and make some corrections based on what you thought was inappropriate or wrong from your own parents. But ultimately, even passing parenting down, you're going to have the generational difference depending on the environment, the culture. You know, to me, it's comforting to know that nothing is new under the sun, that every generation has struggled with parenting since the beginning of time, since Adam and Eve, and that they didn't get it right, right? And that the struggle isn't, how do we do this really well with this unrealistic expectation that we've got to make an A on this? Because then parents are set up for failure, and we all respond differently to that kind of stress. And that, again, goes back to, you know, feeling like God is watching us. And is he disapproving? Or are we obeying him? Or what do I know about that? How can I teach my kids if I don't even know what it means to obey God?
I was telling some students that I did not, my first exposure to the internet was when I was 30. And it was like the concept of eternity. Like, it was mind-blowing to them to think I made it to 30.
What did you do?
I mean, truly, like, they couldn't get their heads around it. And I think, you know, we're the first generation to raise kids. Like, I have no idea what it must have been like, or what it's like to be raised with comparing myself to perfection, perceived perfection, all over social media. That just wasn't the reality I was raised in.
Right.
So I feel like, as parents, we're like this generation, we're figuring it out. And but the relationship part, it's difficult. I mean, even me last night, I laid in bed on my phone, my husband laid in bed on his phone, and I felt so convicted that this is wrong. Like, it would be better to be laying with a book, and we just laid there. And so I think it's just, we haven't figured out how to parent with it. Like, I'm constantly changing my game and learning new things from other parents. I'm not that we haven't figured it out.
Right.
Parents are awesome. All of y'all are amazing. I'm not trying to shame parents. But it's hard.
I think you have a northern star, whether you know it or not.
Mm-hmm.
You are targeting for something, and you may not have articulated this or not. And in our culture, and I've talked with people from other cities, I always feel like, you know, where I live is especially unique and crazy, and they're like, oh yeah, we got that.
Mm-hmm.
We got that, and then they add a couple new problems that I don't have to deal with, but that our culture, the goal is, I have to raise a successful kid.
Mm-hmm.
Now, very few parents...
With no definition of what successful is.
Because if you say it out loud, it sounds vapid. I mean,
right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
That make a lot of money.
Yeah.
Well, that's not, that doesn't sound like good enough. But so you have it, but you don't say it out loud. Mm-hmm. You don't even know that that's what it is. But 1,000 decisions a day are being made. So you have to be getting good grades at all costs.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to pressure you. I spoke to a young man. He's out of college. And when he was young, the pressure to perform academically was so intense, he went temporarily blind from the stress. And I've seen that. I mean, that was in, you know,
House episode?
This Is Us.
Okay.
But I'm like, that's in the movies.
Right.
I know a guy who was so stressed from having to achieve every day, every hour of every day, that he temporarily went blind from the stress. And that's your body and God saying, throttle it back a little bit,
right,
or a lot. But what an insufficient goal.
So even if his parents were parents that were like, grades don't matter, we want you to, you know, their peers are putting the pressure on.
Sure.
The school district.
Kids do it to themselves.
Yes. So you can even have parents that's not really a priority. And the way our society is right now, if you don't do it, then you're not successful. You're not top 10%. You know, so it's a crazy maker. So that was all.
Well, and we set them up for failure by doing that.
And mathematically,
I undo it.
Not everybody can be in the top 10%.
Right.
I mean, but everybody
right.
around here feels like that would be normal to be
right.
in the top 10%.
And every different type of child, every different type of personality and temperament processes that kind of pressure differently.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And then you got to incorporate what their parents have, you know, taught them on how to process stress, and then how they've demonstrated that. Again, if that's consistent, that's always beneficial. But they don't even, you know, so some of them will just check out and say, they'll
right.
drop out of school.
Right.
Plenty of kids
I
drop
can't
out.
Compete. I'm
nope.
out.
What's the point? I'm
going
to end up doing this job anyway, so why should I bother? High school graduation doesn't seem to matter.
Right.
And so we, sociologically, we develop our own norms, right? And we go find something that we can do that's not going to, you know, be so stressful. But we've accommodated that stress in so many ways by providing stress relief through pharmacology, through, you can be 13, 14 years old and going to get a massage now because you're stressed and your parents are worried about you. And so they take care of you in some way that says, let me help find somebody else that can help take care of you so you're not so stressed. And they're 14 years old.
And then go back into the pressure cooker.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Because they don't feel like they have a choice of that.
So I would propose an alternative to success being your Northern Star, that it would be relationship.
Yes.
And Deuteronomy chapter 6, and it's so famous among Orthodox Jews that they have a name for it, and that's the Shema. And this is God speaking to the nation of Israel through Moses, and he's about to say words that they've never heard before. Mm-hmm. They have lived off oral traditions from Abraham, you know, but this is unique. Mm-hmm. God is speaking. Moses is writing it down, and he's telling them stuff about God that God has never said before. So if you were going to open, you would want the big stuff up front.
Yeah.
Like the important stuff comes first. And the question, because I know what it says, the question that I think is valuable for anybody to be thinking about is, what does God want most from me?
Hmm.
Now, I was raised in church. And it was a great church, but I walked away pretty certain that what God wants most from me is to obey the rules. Because that was kind of the atmosphere, and it helped you manage the kids, you know. It's and I was an adult. I mean, I've read this, and I'm sure I heard this verse 1,000 times growing up, but I read it once as an adult. And it was one of those moments that we often have, like, okay, who put that in my Bible? That was not here last year. But the Shema in Deuteronomy chapter 6, what does God care most about? The first thing he leads with, this, love the Lord your God, basically with everything you've got. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a bunch of rules coming. There's chapters of stuff to do and not do, and that's coming. So this is not an opposition to that. God wants most for us to be interested, willing, and capable emotionally and spiritually to love him with everything we've got. And in my experience, in our culture, we kind of feel like the relationship stuff, that's going to take care of itself. What we got to focus on is athletics. Because that's going to make my kid's life so good in the future. And best if they can be superior athletes and superior academically, because then they'll have the world.
Free college.
Yes.
I mean, then I win, right? Because then I got my kid in and I didn't have to pay for it.
And the relational stuff, and I would say, you know, parenthetically, and all of the God stuff, that's going to take care of itself.
Right. They'll figure that out on their own.
Because that's natural.
Yeah.
That will come by osmosis or I don't know what. But if success is not my northern star, if relationship, both with humans. Now, when Jesus was re-quoting this verse, he adds to love the Lord your God, again, you know, the message kind of thing, with everything you've got, and love others. So that's the stuff. But we think that's going to happen by itself, and we train for other things that we think are either more difficult, but certainly more important. And we leave this, so we have unusually a generation or two now who really don't know how to have relationship.
Right.
And it's not just with people. Then when we speak to them about God, they don't have a frame of reference. They don't. They're going to do stuff like, I think I just hacked the code of God and he has to do what he said, so I win. You have violated about 17 rules of relationship right there, and you don't even know it.
Or that it's something to be achieved. You don't achieve
a success thing, sure.
A relationship. You invest and you give, you don't achieve it. Yeah, and so that goes back to me again about the obeying part. The only reason you would want to have that relationship with anyone in your life to where it made a difference in who you were or how you lived with a person, much less a God, is because you were desiring for someone to know more about you and to know more about them, to even know that that is a drive within us is important. And that goes back to the obedience part. I mean, part of the reason we teach obedience and God asks us to obey is so that we can acknowledge his authority. And that authority means that's how he loves. And that's why I think, again, going back to the Old Testament, you know, we want to focus on just the how he loves through the sacrifice of Christ. But before he paid that ultimate price, he was trying to show the Israelites how he loved. And he gave them guidance to do that. And this is the exact direction that he asked them, to love him, to see him as the ultimate creator and their authority, and that obeying him was an act of reciprocating that love. And so we don't teach our children that. They don't know to expect even others to respect or be accountable to one another. I mean, accountability is a part of that obeying, and that's a demonstration of love. But a paradigm that we are not familiar with.
And we either don't value enough to talk about, or we think they're going to instinctively figure out something that is not at all instinctive in our for a fallen nature.
Right, and I think that's part of why people do bring their families to church. They're hoping that they will find that here, affirmation, validation, information, encouragement. They're hoping to find that. And then they're saying, if we bring our kids here, they will grow up here, and they will find it here. And then, unfortunately, they you know, kind of pick and choose what they want to take that from. And then if it doesn't end up providing their kids, then what happens? You acknowledged it when we started. Then it's the church's fault. It's the ministry leader's fault for not making sure their kid found it here or got that. And ultimately, there's no accountability for the child in that.
So if we have the kid, the girl in this case, because I'm going to force myself to
think of girls.
Not the girl. Be thinking just about the guys. How would we train someone to be interested in pursuing relationship with, I think is actually in our DNA, but ready and willing to do the stuff because it's a whooping. I mean, the beauty of online relationships is I can give you a pinhole to look through and see only the two decent things about me, and you won't see anything else. But that's not relationship. That's manipulative control. I can, close the thing if I want to, or turn my phone off, which of course we never do. But we could if we wanted to. And all of that stuff is counter to relationship. And that's what they're learning to do, is to manage their self-image, manage and mock people who are not doing so well or have goofed or have sent, naked pictures of themselves to a friend. And heavens, who would have thought that it would have been passed around the world
in
5 hours? And of course it will.
Yeah.
So if you had a kid come up to you, a girl come up to you and say, I'm kind of lost. I'm lonely. Mm-hmm. And that's an epidemic. Mm-hmm. I read an article earlier this week. I mean, that's like an insurance company classification. Mm. Like, it's an epidemic, loneliness.
Mm-hmm. It is.
And if you have a problem of that magnitude, and then you look for, the grown-ups, okay, so what are they going to do about it? And you see them doing nothing about it, your only conclusions are, well, I guess then that's normal, or they're crazy,
they can't handle it.
Follow them.
That's right. They can't handle it. So if my parents can't handle it, then God can't handle it either.
So if you have...
My parents are lonely too.
Oh, gosh.
For sure. So you have a girl. She comes to you and says, I'm tapped out. I've tried everything. Mm. It hasn't worked. Maybe it hasn't even failed miserably. But it hasn't worked. I'm lonely. I don't want to be. What do I do?
The first thing I would do is spend some quality time with her. One of the things that we need in the church is more adults that are willing to spend quality time with young people and invest in relationships. Yeah. So... for me personally, I have a story of I don't look perfect. I don't act perfect. Like, I'm a hot mess, and people are drawn to me, and it has nothing to do with the way I look or the way it's just, so it's helpful.
And they're not drawn to you because you're a hot mess. They're drawn to you because you have this amazing heart. And
but I'm saying
there's a messy part too.
It's about not the way I look, and I'm not trying to pretend.
Yes.
Right.
So we start
they
there.
They feel that.
And then just talking about it, it only takes a few to really start to be honest in their small groups about the loneliness for all of them to just be bought in. So I think really the first thing is to confess that that's where they're at. And then to identify tools and relationship building skills. And at that point, after I've met with her a couple times on our own, I bring in others. Mm-hmm. And then we just pick a topic that I know they have in common. And I pick others with the preface of, if you're coming, you're gonna have to be open. If you're not willing, then you're not invited. But trying to just create community. And then after community's been established, I tried to step out. But we have so many girls in our group that are self-harming, not just alcohol, sex, drugs, which is self-harming, but the actual cutting, which they know they're hurting themselves. They can't justify it as partying or having fun to ease the pain. So we our kids have such great theology. I mean, even in our preschool area, when it came Good Friday, I felt silly telling the story because they could tell it to me. I mean, they're amazing. But the relationship component is being taught to them by stunted adults. So we've got to show them that we're willing to be open about who we are with others. I've really prayed and practiced not to freak out when a girl comes to me with something scary, and just to step in and remind them, you know, there's a gazillion stories in the Bible, not a gazillion, but in particular when the woman was caught in the act and brought to Jesus, and I imagine she was pretty naked, maybe covered in a robe at that point, and you know, Jesus loved her in that moment, and that's right where he is with whoever this girl is. And but it is overwhelming that we don't have enough grown-ups, and I know they're out there and they want to, but I think the grown-ups are afraid. Like, I'm not.
Absolutely.
I'm not capable.
I'm not good enough.
Yeah. I don't have a good enough story. Right. And they just need to be loved and shown what a relationship looks like. And it doesn't mean that it's happy-go-lucky all the time. It means confrontation, and it means, you know, being real and honest. So basically, do we just lean in and try to identify the students that have it? You know, there's a top 10% there that have identified as good relationship builders, and we call them in and they serve and love in that way.
Yeah, and developmentally at that place, really, they're more likely to believe and take in the love and care and information of someone who is not in their family or immediate circle. And so the opportunity that we have here at church to have people step in and communicate that love personally, and then communicate the love of God that they've learned of, is exponential, off the charts, because it's an outside source that they are having to encounter for the first time, and they can't help but believe them because they have no reason to not trust them.
Right. There's no reason. And we do, in that same regard, reach out to the folks, the parents, and try to build relationships with them and love on them, because we know if their child is going through this, that the stress at home is crazy. So,
because they're scared.
Yeah.
If their kids struggle, and they're scared no matter what.
And you have no idea how to cope with that until you're in it. And then it's, you know, so we're all overwhelmed. And I just think the more, as a church, we can be honest about, like, the real stuff. I think we've gotten a little bit better about the, I'm exhausted, I have three kids under three, and I'm not getting any sleep. But, I mean, as our kids get older, it seems like parents, we kind of hide it a little bit better. And that's when the real stuff is starting to...
So the relationship thing is not exotic. Mm-mm. It's not mysterious. But some of the things about relationship that are worth stating is that it requires a vast amount of time. The outcome is uncertain. I mean, you can pour yourself in and get... little, nothing, get rejected. Those are all possibilities. Or you can be changed in the process.
Yeah.
And, you know, the prospect of a relationship with my kid so that he knows who I am. Well, I'm pretty devoted to him not knowing who I am.
Exactly.
Right. Or certainly not everything.
Yeah, so, who you were at his age.
Yeah, oh, for sure not that.
And I think, to your point, Chrissy, that that's kind of where people outside of your circle can come in completely unencumbered. And I mean, one of your superpowers is you kind of are a tornado of love, and you overwhelm people with your openness, and you will just tell them what you think, what you feel,
how you feel,
tell them your story, and they're shocked because they've never met an honest person who loves God that much and who is open to loving them. And it is, I mean, they might reject that because it's too confusing. Like, nobody could love me, so I'm going to reject that.
Right.
But if you're healthy enough to be able to, you almost have no choice but to step toward that. Because I think in our spiritual DNA, we were designed to ache for intimacy, And in the garden, there was no threat.
Mm-hmm.
We were designed for intimacy, and there was no downside. Right after, you know, they got into the fruit bowl, there was huge risk.
Right.
If I open myself up to you, I'm exposed.
Right.
And you know everything. And that's now our primal purpose, mm-hmm. is to not be known. But our spiritual DNA aches, mm-hmm. to be known and loved. So there's,
especially by God.
Mm-hmm. So there's the conundrum.
Mm-hmm.
Is the thing my heart aches for most, my fear of rejection is overpowering,
mm-hmm.
and I am stuck.
Sure.
And because I've had people reject me, surely God's going to do the same thing.
Right.
So I'm not moving toward him.
There's no way I could be worthy.
Until I get good enough, which is...
Never.
Never.
What does that even mean? Yeah. And so Satan has us in this, this
vicious
blender
cycle. Yeah.
Where we can never get a footing. We're only going to get hurt. Mm-hmm. People are not a perceived threat. They are an actual threat.
Mm-hmm.
And this is true for the parents,
mm-hmm.
as well as the kids, though there's differences both in life stage and I think intensity. The younger you are, the more intense this all is. But we have a God,
mm-hmm.
who is able to overpower all of that.
Yeah.
And I think our chief problem is we don't really believe that to be true.
Mm-hmm.
And what if it were, this is like a movie where they're talking about, you know, if you can go into the cave and get the magical blah, 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 then... And you're like, yeah, there's no unicorns.
Mm.
There's no... That's I've heard of it, never seen it, don't believe it exists.
Mm.
But what if God's love was actually accessible? What would that be like?
Well, I think they would find that it's freedom. It's not only that... peace and comfort that comes with being able to even just somewhat believe that someone knows me and someone cares to know me and to pursues me with love, no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
But even if that person being God is not tangible and I can't see him, the whole shift is that I could actually see that, sense that, feel that from a person here on earth.
Mm-hmm.
And that isn't just because God gave Linda a bigger heart and she can do that. It's because of what God has done in Linda and is doing through Linda that she can pour that out to those kids so genuinely that they don't doubt it. There's no question. And even to hear you, the way you speak about her, there is no question. Now, that's not because Linda is perfect or because she is, you know, so confident in her own love. It's because that's what God is doing amongst us who are believers. And that's what he's called us to do when he, on the second end of that, love others. Not just so people will feel good because somebody on earth loves them, but so that we can demonstrate mm-hmm. that love that God is pouring into us to other people. And that is the only way kids will believe it, is if they can see it in real terms, in a real relationship, even if that relationship doesn't last more than a few months.
So do you feel like with children or in youth, it's based on experiences versus...
knowledge?
Right.
Most definitely.
And I feel like that's...
But our culture outweighs the knowledge.
Right.
Again, we made an idol out of education.
Right.
And said that's way more important than what you experience. And so going away and getting the mm-hmm. you know, highest grades and the most achieved possibility and degree... outvalues the relationships that can be built in a home where three generations live.
Mm.
And we have some cultures here now in the United States that have brought that mm-hmm. back to America and still see that as a high value in their family. But ultimately, they're raising their kids in a American culture that disputes that actually speaks against it. Because isolation and individualizing, being independent, is so much more important. Because you can't be successful, by the way, without being independent.
Yeah, I don't, yeah.
Which is deception altogether.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So when we go off to camp or Pine Cove or any kind of getaway, or even VBS, the kids, students come back like kind of on fire for the Lord. There's that camp high. And one student asked me, how can that is? Like, how can we recreate that feeling that you have at camp at home? You know, because you do like feel him there. And I know loving God isn't about a feeling so much as knowing him. But anyway, and we really broke down, what does your week look like on a normal week? And what does your week look like at camp? And at camp, there's no distractions. It is 24/7 about him.
And relationships. Mm-hmm,
and relationships. And your normal week is very, you know, there's 2 hours that are about him if you come to everything we offer. And then it's school, and they're not in relationship. And if they are, it's like this. And even as the church, trying to come up with small groups, it's hard. I mean, it is like we're fighting to make them authentic and real. But I think that that's the difference, is, and they can see it. Mm-hmm. So they can experience it, they can feel it, they know it's achievable, but they're not ready to give all that time, you know, to it.
But that's why we completely believe that 1 week away at camp, mm-hmm. where the value of relationship is the key to the whole mm-hmm. experience.
We call it friendship camp. It's yeah. that important.
That's right.
Yes.
And it's clearly relationship among the people that you're with, and be they leaders that are adults or peers, but also the relationship that the speaker is talking about mm-hmm. and threading through everything they do, their activities, their meals. He's threading everything they do through that message of relationship that God mm-hmm. wants to have with them. And that's where I think our faith, our Christian faith, is profoundly more understandable and tangible than any other religion they'll encounter, mm-hmm. because it's a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. And, you know, having been raised in the church, you've heard that phrase ad nauseum. But until you can describe that to another person, you can speak to how that's personal for you, that's what transforms you, mm-hmm. right? And 1 week, you know that God is going to allow that possibility to be opened up. And that's why you fight to get them there, man. You do the bake mm-hmm. sales. You make sure that they have the scholarship to get there. You get the kids that could never go mm-hmm. to be able to go and have that opportunity. Because, you know, showing up with their buddy here for an hour isn't going to be as mm-hmm. Ideal.
Well, and to back to the, you know, if I've heard about a unicorn, but I've never seen one, eh. But if I go away for a week and I experience people who are loving mm-hmm. me, and they're kind of a mess, but I sort of tasted some loving mm-hmm. of them. Oh, wow, mm-hmm. maybe that's real. And then we go home. I would like to stay there, but the mm-hmm. people who actually work there all summer, they're not completely experiencing that all every day. But
right.
like, okay, I saw a unicorn. I know there it's possible for people who are a mess. Mm-hmm. to care for each other, talk into each other's lives, and not let stuff go by mm-hmm. without talking. Like, I saw it for a week. I know it's real. I know it mm-hmm. exists. And perhaps I'm not okay with just 1 week a year. So I got to figure out mm-hmm. how to be more like that for my friends. And so that, so camp is not like the win. Camp is, we're whetting your appetite.
Starting point, yeah.
To pursue that kind of safety. And mm-hmm. that's one of the things that, Linda, you're famous for, is that you're safe. Mm-hmm. Nobody can shock, and you, Chrissy, too, nobody can shock either of you. They can tell you anything, and you're going to just like, I'm so sorry
yeah.
that you had to go through that. But not, oh my, you know, and
right.
which is what they are almost certain is going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
They're waiting to be rejected. Mm-hmm. And when they're not, it's really confusing mm-hmm. because that challenges their whole worldview. What if there are people out there who would know me and love me and take care of me? And if that's possible, if I've seen that, mm-hmm. maybe mm-hmm. I could believe that about God, which
yeah.
is the goal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what we're
called to show. Yeah.
So, we're going to close today's episode up. Thank you, ladies, for being here. We're going to talk again about our next topic that's teed up. So thank you for joining us with another Parenting Pathway podcast.
Thank you for having me.
I want to say thank PPP, but me. Then that'll make me giggle, so I'm not going to say that. And remember, do not do parenting and do not do life.